Welcome to the conference. Please enter the conference ID followed by the pound key. Thank you. Guest ID accepted.
And good evening, everyone. Welcome to another Monday night installment here at Your Remedy Is in the Law. Tonight, of course, we're discussing various offensive litigating strategies. And this is with our speaker, Mr. David Merlin. My name is Martin Michaels. I'll be your host for this evening's conference brought to you by Your Remedy Is in the Law, which is in direct affiliation with Americans Restoring America. Before we get started with this evening, though, it is very important that I provide you with the following disclaimer.
Nothing that you hear on this call tonight may be deemed by you in any way, shape, or form to be legal advice. If you are on this call because of a situation in your life where you require legal advice, I very gladly ask you to hang up the phone. Now, we don't mean to sound rude when we say this. We just want to express to everyone in no uncertain terms that anyone joining this call looking for legal advice has no place or business here. Nobody here at Your Remedy Is in the Law or any of the programs offered by Americans Restoring America is a lawyer, attorney, or any member of the bar. Therefore, no one here is able to offer you any legal advice. Should you require legal advice, my advice to you would be get an attorney. As for these calls, they're all just for entertainment purposes. It's just folks saying what they might do where they're similarly situated to you. You might get a little bit of education out of it, but mainly you're just going to get folks' opinions about what they might do. However educated and experienced these thoughts and opinions might be, they are just people's opinions nonetheless. And it's always up to you to do your own due diligence. All right, on to the next subject. I'd like to go over a few things here with Your Remedy Is in the Law, if I could, very quickly. First of all, if I can take everybody to the homepage of www.yourremedyisinthelaw.com. If we look in the upper right-hand corner, we see a little picture of the Constitution. Click on that, and you'll have a separate page come up with just two items on it. These two items are of much importance, though, especially if this is all new to you. First and most importantly on the left is the jurisdictionary course. This is your 24-hour crash course on the rules of civil procedure. Better known to some as American jurisprudence or AMJUR, the rules of civil procedure are essentially the foundation or structure upon which all law in America rests. So to have a firm and thorough understanding of these rules means to have at least a basic understanding of what's going on in virtually any court scenario that you find yourself in. On the right is the common law default process, mostly known for its high national win rate in most traffic cases throughout the country. At least that's what it's most popularly acquired for. But that is not really why it's on this page. The reason that we have it up here with the jurisdictionary course is when you go through it, you'll notice that it utilizes all of the same fundamental procedures that you learned about in the jurisdictionary course. So it kind of acts as a real-life homework assignment. Also, for a lot of folks, it's their first time committing to action. Folks seem a little more willing to take that first step, probably because of such a high success rate and traffic scenarios being such a common interest in this country today. The common law default, although known majorly for traffic purposes, has many other truly it's for most scenarios that you may find yourself in where there's no damage to property or person. It's just some entity is claiming you broke a rule, therefore you must pay a civil penalty. Both of these items are very affordably priced. The jurisdictionary with a contribution of $250 and the common law default at $150. Also on the subject of Your Remedy Is in the Law, most of you are probably familiar now with Americans Restoring America. Every time you visit the homepage of YourRemedyIsInTheLaw.com, you are met with that blue box that pops up asking if you'd like to continue on to the site that you were visiting or stay and visit Americans Restoring America. The reason that we've done this is very simple. We're trying to get folks to explore. There are multiple information providers talking about multiple subjects, as well as many other features and study groups that Your Remedy Is in the Law. And Your Remedy Is in the Law is just one of a couple dozen websites that altogether make up Americans Restoring America. So it's quite a bit for you to see, and we hope that you'll do just that at your leisure. If you have any questions about whether or not we have an information provider that could give you their personal educated opinion about your particular situation, get a hold of us at YourRemediesInTheLaw.com, and we'll be happy to assist you in any way that we can. Statewide communications. If you're not already a member, please do sign up. Tell your friends and family about it. That's that map of the United States that you see on virtually every site that we have. It's a private communications platform that enables folks to speak with one another on a local level based on a very strict, pre-decided topics of discussion. Essentially, how it works is this. A wizard will walk you through a very easy setup. You know, put your name in here, click next. Put your zip code in here, click next, that sort of thing. Then it will walk you through the remainder of the setup. And then you'll get to a point where it'll ask you, what are your hot points? What are you interested in? This could range anything from credit card issues, home foreclosure, IRS matters, asset protection, or maybe veterans' rights, maybe personal health rights. Anything that you can think of that if it affects your personal rights in one way or another, you should find it in that list or something that's close enough. When the setup is complete, it puts it all together, much like you think of a social network. Though nothing like a social network. It's very custom. It's very private. But it then puts you in contact with people in your local area that have similar interests to you. The idea here is to put the power of education and communication back in the hands of the common man. If you are in need of legal advice or you need someone to represent you, you're going to have to get an attorney. It's just that simple. But if there was a way, a private place that you could go to discuss matters, your personal things, their personal things, with people that were like-minded, and maybe you jump online one day and you say, this happened to me today. First person comes back and says, well, I disagree with that. I don't think they should be able to do that. I don't think that's fair. Well, that's probably not going to be a tremendous amount of help to you. And maybe the next person comes on and says, well, I'll tell you what I would do where I similarly situated. I'd watch these YouTube videos, and then I'd go down there to my local county courthouse, go to the law library, get a law dictionary, and look up these terms. Maybe the next person after that says, those all sound like great ideas. I'd also go to this particular website and check out these educational materials that might assist you in your learning. And then for you to go and do some due diligence on what you're reading, just people's suggestions, people's opinions at all. But if you did some due diligence and educated yourself, maybe the further you got into it, you discovered that it's not as difficult as you initially thought it would be because you're focused on one single subject. And you get to a point where you've educated to yourself, and now you're handling your own affairs, your own matters. Well, folks, there's nothing illegal or unlawful about that. And that's all we're trying to do here at Statewide Communications is just very simply get people to start talking again. Of course, there's no cost to you for using Statewide Communications, either signing up or the regular using of it. And so we hopefully you'll pass that around. Freedoms Radio. If you're on the road, you don't want to deal with the call process, maybe you're just new to your remedies in the law and you don't yet have your username and password, therefore you can't see the phone number and the PIN. By the way, if you'd like to pick up a membership to your remedies in the law, it's very easy. You just simply click the register button. Fill out your basic information there. You'll enjoy the first 30 days for free to evaluate it. After that, it converts to a very affordable $10 a month on your credit card or your PayPal. Every single call is recorded. You have years of archives to go through, a vast wealth of knowledge, as well as many other wonderful features. But if that's not an option for you today, you have freedomsradio.com. Every night, the calls go out over the air at 9 p.m. Eastern live. There's also the question bar there where you can type in a question, click submit. As long as that's during call hours, that will pop up on the moderator screen, and we do our best to read every single one of those questions out over the air as long as they are appropriate. So you don't get the one-on-one with the information provider like you would be by being a private member, but you do get your questions answered. There's no cost to utilize Freedoms Radio, so no matter where you are or your circumstances, you never have to miss a call again if you don't wish. All right, winding down here, I'd like to go over one last bit of housekeeping. This is your caveat emptor, or your buyer beware. For any purchase that you may make at your remedies in the law or any of the other sites underneath the umbrella of Americans Restoring America, when you come aboard and you go with an information provider, you are doing just that. Information providers pay Mr. Everett for advertising at your remedies in the law. This payment would be an expense to that information provider along with any other expenses that they might have associated with your particular product or service. When you contact us, all we simply do is listen to your particular scenario, quickly deduce from a list of folks that honestly most of you would probably never be able to find on your own just simply because they can't be found. And we make those introductions. Not every part on the information provider is always going to be successful. Everybody always hopes for the best. We plan for the best, and believe you me, we aim for the best. The unavoidable things do sometimes happen, and when they do, you have to roll with them and deal with them as you would with anything else in life. Again, we also want to emphasize, though, that the intent is always to be successful. If you have any questions of that, we welcome you to visit www.yourremedyisinthelaw.com/testimonials and see what others have had to say about these products and services. Now, let's touch very quickly on the subject of refunds or the refund policy. There is none. Not if your remedy is in the law, anyway. Of course, when you call board and you go with a particular information provider, again, that is exactly what you're doing. So any discussion of a refund or a credit would be a strict and private matter between you and the information provider, and even then, that's very few and far between. It must be extenuating circumstances. You are expected to have done your due diligence before you commit to any particular process or information provider's time. All right. Lastly, pertaining here to all of the information providers at Your Remedy is in the Law, we'd like you to remind everybody that all of our speakers at these conferences are our guests and should be treated with the highest level of respect. If you disagree with something that a speaker has to say, that's fine. Disagreeing is how we learn, but please, you must always be civil. Besides, if a question is posed properly and then answered properly, then we can all learn something from it.
All right, well, that is my ramble for this evening, folks. So without further ado, it is my pleasure.
To turn the call over to Michael Edward, and here I am. Here I are. Pardon a little pause there, delay. I was muted and started talking and then looked over and said, oh, my mute button's on. Tonight, before we turn over to GW, I want to share with you that the Supreme Court of the United States of America has ruled there are two United States. So the question begs, which government of these two governments do you live under? In U.S. versus Cruikshank, 92 U.S. 542, this is 1875. So this is about a decade after the Civil War. Quote, we have in our political system a government of the United States and a government of each of the several states. Each one of these governments is distinct from the others. And each has citizens of its own who owe its allegiance and whose rights within its jurisdiction it must protect. The same person may be at the same time a citizen of the United States and a citizen of the state, but his rights of citizenship under one of these governments will be different from those he has under the other. End quote. In the United States of America, we the people are sovereign over and above that of government. As such, the government only has authority to have those specific powers that have been delegated to it through our constitutions. As stated in legal tender cases at 110 U.S. 421, the year was 1884. It's also referred to as Juilliard versus Greenland. But be that as it may, there's no such thing as a power of inherent sovereignty in the government of the United States. It's a government of delegated powers, supreme within its proscribed sphere, but powerless outside of that sphere. In this country, sovereignty resides in the people, and Congress can exercise no power which they have not, by their constitution, and entrusted to it, and all else is withheld. In other words, the United States Incorporated has total jurisdiction only within its territory. Its territory is not within the 50 states, except for enclaves the states have ceded to the federal government. You should note that unless a Supreme Court case is repealed, it still stands as the authority in law, no matter how many centuries have passed. As sovereigns, the federal government does not have the authority over we the people that it presumes to take with all the laws passed at the federal level. As defined on dictionary.com, a sovereign is, one, a monarch, a king, a queen, or other supreme ruler. Two, a person who has sovereign power or authority. Three, having supreme rank, power, or authority. Four, supreme, preeminent, indisputable, a sovereign right. And five, the greatest in decree and utmost or extreme. Number six, being above all others in character, importance, and excellence. As you can see by these definitions, there cannot be two sovereigns in the same country. In the case of the United States of America, it is we the people who are sovereign as individuals, which makes us, each of us, the highest authority in our lives. We all have equal and the highest authority over and above the government and other people from other countries. That is why the rights protected under the Constitution do not apply to people or prisoners from other countries when they come here until such time as they become people of the United States of America. So you hear people talk on the news about illegal immigrants, illegal aliens being in our country. They have rights and, you know, no, they don't. They have no rights. The government, therefore, cannot also be sovereign. Basically, we still have a free country. You just have to know in which country you are domiciled. The Supreme Court has ruled that there are actually two separate United States. The government is sovereign in one of them, and we, the people, are sovereign in the other. One of these United States is the one that most of us Americans think of when we say that we are United States citizens and without stipulation. This is the one in which we, the people, are sovereign. Unfortunately, most Americans have been fooled into transferring themselves into second-class United States citizens in which the federal government is the sovereign and we, the people, are not. The method of transfer is usually done, though, through signing an Internal Revenue Service form or Social Security form. The particular cases in which the Supreme Court has defined the two United States were in 1901 in what is known as Downs versus Bidwell, 182 U.S. 244, and then it was upheld in 1945 by Hooven and Allison Company versus Avett, 324 U.S. 652. The Downs versus Bidwell case was brought when the United States was attempting to charge a higher tariff to goods imported from Puerto Rico, which the United States had recently acquired, Article 1, Section 8, Clause 1. It states, the Congress shall have power to lay and collect taxes, duties, imposts, and excises to pay the debts and provide for the common defense and general welfare of the United States. Now pay attention to this next part. But all duties, imposts, and excises shall be uniform throughout the United States. The plaintiff was arguing that it was unconstitutional for there to be higher tariffs charged for imports from Puerto Rico since it was now a territory of the United States of America. And with a vote of 5-4, the judges ruled in Downs versus Bidwell, quote, constitutional restrictions and limitations were not applicable to the areas of lands, enclaves, territories, and possessions over which the Congress had exclusive legislative authority, end quote. Well, this opened up a devil's lair to the biggest scam that anyone has ever been able to pull off in the history. It enabled the United States federal government to start passing something called municipal law that has no constitutional impact in the United States of America, but is enforceable within the federal government's United States, where the federal government is the sovereign instead of we the people. It's also consistent with Article 1, Section 8, Clause 17 of our Constitution. Let me just see something here real quick. We'll be right back. All right, I'll continue. The dissenting opinion was delivered by Justice John Marshall Harlan, in which he predicted much of what has occurred. Quote, "The idea prevails with some, indeed it has found expression in arguments at the bar, that we have in this country substantially two national governments, one to be maintained under the Constitution with all its restrictions, the other to be maintained by the Congress outside and independently of that instrument by exercising such powers as other nations of the earth are accustomed to." I take leave to say that if the principles thus announced should ever receive the sanction of a majority of this court, a radical and mischievous change in our system of government will result. We will, in that event, pass from the era of constitutional liberty into an era of legislative absolutism. It'll be an evil day for American liberty if the theory of government outside the supreme law of the land finds lodgment in our constitutional jurisprudence. No higher duty rests upon this court than to exert its full authority to prevent all violations of the principles of the Constitution. The results of this opinion is a legislature that passed laws for two separate countries. They just do not expose which one of them that they are in session at that time. The intent is to fool the American people into believing that they have jurisdiction when they actually do not. And it's really just all about money. In 1945, a second case was brought, the result of which was to uphold the first case in Hooven and Allison Company versus Yvette, 334 U.S. 652. The Supreme Court defined the two separate United States, and they stated that it would be the last time that it would address the, quote, official definitions, end quote, of the United States. The thought here is the Supreme Court justices really didn't want to make it very obvious that there were two different United States, since that would result in exposing their fraud, particularly the fraud of the income tax. The ruling stated in part, and I see GW has arrived, so I'll wrap this up real quickly here, but this is important. The ruling stated in part, the term United States may be used in any one of several senses. It may be merely the name of a sovereign occupying the position analogous to that of other sovereigns in the family of nations. Now, who might that be? That's the first definition. Who might that be? Well, I trace my genealogy back to 1662. When the first Scotsman of my clan arrived in Massachusetts. And I further looked at the militia, the Massachusetts militia, at the time of our revolution, and I found that my grandfather, eight times removed, Nathaniel, was there listed in the Massachusetts militia. He fought in the Revolutionary War, the War for Independence. And again, he fought in the War of 1812. He was there mustered in the Massachusetts militia. So by birthright, Michael Edward is the name of a sovereign occupying the position analogous to that of other sovereigns in the family of nations. The second definition, it may designate the territory over which the sovereignty of the United States extends. Well, if the United States is sovereign, we have already talked about that earlier in this part of this call, you're a subject to the United States. In fact, if you go to the 14th Amendment, you can read further there, that was written for former Africans who in the 13th Amendment were freed, and at that point in the 13th Amendment had no standing to sue or be sued. But when the 14th Amendment came in, they had a choice. Pennsylvania and New York, both of those states, invited the former slaves to become citizens of Pennsylvania and to become citizens of New York. However, in great fear of the racism, they wanted the military protection of the United States, so they elected to become United States citizens. Those that elected to become United States citizens literally transferred from being property of a plantation owner to property of the United States. In other words, they went from one owner of property of a few thousand acres or a few hundred thousand acres to the owner of a property of possibly as much as 6 million acres. The third definition is it may be the collective names of the states which are united by and under the Constitution. Who are these people? These are these people who came after the Revolutionary War, the War for Independence. They came after, so they came in 1795 or beyond, 1791 and beyond. That's when they came here, 1789 and beyond. After that, they could not qualify as one of the sovereignty, but they could qualify as a citizen of one of the Union states, which are united by and under the Constitution. In other words, definition number two has privileges, and you recognize that they're privileges because you have to get a license. Definition number three are people who have constitutional rights. Number two has civil rights. Number three has constitutional rights. Civil rights come and go depending on the marketing and what's going on. You actually have no rights. They're just civil privileges. Or the third definition is constitutional rights, where there is an estoppel, a bar of the against the government from proceeding against you, where it says the right to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed for people that are citizens of one of the Union states. It shall not be infringed. They can't even talk to you about it. So the fact that you have to go through a background check, that you're told how many rounds of ammunition that you may have at any given time, what kind of rifle that you have or pistol, that it may not, the best you can hope for is semi-automatic. You cannot have select fire, meaning fully automatic. You cannot own a battle rifle. Well, you can get all of that if you pay taxes and you qualify with a certain kind of a license. You can have a tank if you want, but you have to pay dearly. If you are a Union state citizen, if you're a United States citizen. But if you're a Union state citizen, there's not a damn thing they can do about it. Now, do the courts recognize this today? Not willingly. You need to be on tomorrow night's call when John updates you on Mr. T, on what direction that he's going. There's going to be a judge very much surprised that he'll have to recuse himself. We'll talk about that tomorrow. By the way, in this, these definitions are in Black's Law Dictionary up through the 6th edition. In the 7th edition and beyond, this definition does not appear. So it's just a matter of them not wanting honest attorneys, while they're still honest, to understand the difference. So with that having been said, it's time to turn this call over to GW. Let him share what he's learned this week, and we'll go from there. GW?
Hey, I am here. I'm here.
Little wonderful.
Little tired from the week, but I'm here. Anyway,
you're a party animal, huh?
No. Just for some reason, man. I'm just pushed. But I'll be better. Anyway, this. Thanks for, Michael, all the information and explanation of that over and over again. I'm sure it really helps people to understand these things.
Yeah, well, when it comes to information, GW, I'm full of it.
Okay. Yeah. Michael will go into the definitions and everything else, which is awesome, and I think that's what people need really to get a good grip of it at a deep level, whereas a lot of times I'll keep it very short, very sweet. The fact that it's hard for a lot of people to believe, but the fact that they have you categorized as a U.S. citizen, they have you categorized as property and franchise of the federal government that they own, and that's the simple reason that they can tell you what kind of gun you can own or what kind of amount of ammunition or whatever else. And because they use that as the legal nexus to be able to do that. And so that's why it's such a big incredible benefit to understand that once you properly correct your status with the U.S. State Department and you understand what you're doing, you've done it with the paperwork and with the affidavit, and you know how to stand on that, you know how to navigate with it, they can't pull that kind of crap on you anymore. And so that's one of the biggest benefits of all, is just understanding who you are and who you're not. So with that part said, this call, of course, is all about that. Hopefully, and maybe we might have some new people on the call that want to understand a little more about this process. And there's a lot of people getting kind of getting triggered to look into it now because of the vast amount of people that have been researching it. There's still a lot of people out there that I was asked to speak at a organization down in a big city close to where I am, and they had even said, the owner of this place had even said, well, there's a lot of people that know about being a state citizen, but they don't know what to do with it. I'm like, okay, yeah, that's pretty natural, because there's a lot of people out there that are really clouding the issues and getting you going off down these other roads that are interesting but aren't really, really relevant to the foundational aspect of correcting your status and securing all of your God-given rights that are backed up by the Constitution. And so that's really what I hit with a lot of my students. I really hit that hard so they can understand, you know, really the things that now they can absolutely claim, and they have standing now to claim it. They have status to claim it. So with that said, I think I'll, I don't know if Martin's on the call here tonight, but I'll just turn it over to either Martin or Michael to open it up for the for questions and answers. Does anybody who wants to ask a question?
Before we do you have any update on the international or the bank that you've been talking to?
Yeah.
The legacy, I think you refer to it as a legacy bank.
Well, I'm not sure that it's I would call it a legacy bank, but it is a it's a private precious metals bank and depository. And so it's, I guess maybe some of the legacy there would be, it's a pre-1933.
Yes, that's chart. Right there.
Yeah. So, yeah, just got an update that they're busily in the process of getting it closed right now. So that's all I have at this point, is they haven't moved from that position.
Okay.
Now,
how will that benefit all of us?
I imagine it could benefit people that are in a position to be able to use it, because it's as soon as the first phase goes through, they'll be opening up for private, you know, individuals to be able to deposit there and also have their assets, you know, stored there. I don't, you know, in the beginning, I might have mentioned this before, and I didn't know this in the very beginning. The first tranche of people that they'll be bringing in are, you know, at 10 million and above. So I don't know if that will include anybody here on the call. So, but
how will that banking system, being that this bank originated prior to 1933, how is it different from those that came into existence after 1933? Can you share that with us?
you know, the full consequences of that, I don't really understand. I'm not an expert myself, and so I wouldn't be the one to kind of to tell you. I know that it's going to function. It'll have the capabilities of functioning as like a regular bank, but then it's going to be private membership, of course. So
right.
It'll have, yeah. So. And, you know, after they close and everything starts to ramp up, I'll be able to have much more information.
Sure, and I'd be happy for you to supplant yourself one Monday night with a representative from the bank to share with us.
Sure.
You know, there's going to be many people post RV, post GCR, that $10 million will just be a drop in the bucket.
Yeah, there you go.
All right, press star 2 on your keypad, ladies and gentlemen. Press star 2 on your keypad, and that'll raise your hand on my end, and I will be happy to open up your microphone and give you a chance to speak. Brent is the first here, raising his hand. Go ahead, Brent.
Good evening. I'm glad you called on me first because I'm about to lose my signal here. But I'll get a question just based on this banking stuff you just brought up. Very quickly, I've been doing some research and going to start endorsing my checks, deposits that I'm going to be depositing, also checks that I write. Lawful money is demanded pursuant to USC or Title 12 USC 411. And apparently that creates a difference between lawful money in Federal Reserve notes and normal Federal Reserve notes. Do you know anything about that?
Absolutely. I used to, this was decades ago when I did not have, okay, and operate through a charitable religious trust, okay? But when I was just operating with another type of trust, and I have a friend that does this all the time too, with the trust that he operates, he's been putting on the back. I haven't memorized because it's you know, did it such a long time ago and always had it. It was, you know, what we put down there is exchange per 12 USC A411 for US note. Okay. So, what we're saying, what you're saying, basically, there, Brent, with demand, okay, is the same thing. And we're just saying exchange, okay, per 12 USC A411, and then it says four U.S. notes, which is, of course, different than Federal Reserve notes, of course. And so, but it accomplishes the same thing. In fact, we had we had another friend that this guy got audited. This is a number of years ago. He got audited and by the IRS, and he had that on every single check that he wrote, except for a few. And those were the only ones that they could come after him on, with a few that he didn't sign that way. And you put that heading. And you know, if you practice on a check, you can do it, you know, in small enough print right across the top, and then you sign under it, okay?
Yeah.
Yeah. So you're accomplishing the same thing, Brent.
There was a recently, I think it was after 2008 or somewhere in there, financial crisis, maybe it was 2012. Sometime Congress passed another law regarding that, basically saying that there is no effective U.S. notes anymore, and that the Federal Reserve notes function as lawful money in place of the U.S. notes.
Okay. All right. Yeah. So what's the point?
Well, I guess my point was that a lot of people were putting that U.S. note thing on their checks, and that Congress then passed a law correcting that, saying anybody who puts U.S. notes on their checks, you know, we're going to get around that one.
Yeah.
Saying that U.S. notes aren't really being used anymore. There's no viable public use for the U.S. notes or however they stated it in the legislation.
Sure.
But they basically nullified the U.S. notes.
Yeah. I understand.
That's it. Thank you very much.
Hey, all right. Thank you very much as well. Did I interrupt you, GW?
No. No.
Okay. Very good. Next is David. David R. Go ahead.
Hey, Michael. Hey, GW. I've visited with you all the past several weeks on verifying the corrected status after I went through the process with you all back in February. Mm-hmm. A week or two ago, I mentioned that I had sent a Freedom of Information request to the State Department to verify and confirm my corrected status as per the DS-11, which included my affidavit and declaration of corrected political status. And I let Michael know today, sent him a copy. I did receive a confirmation receipt from the U.S. Department of State Passport Division on that FOIA request with a reference number and a toll-free number to follow up on. They did indicate that if it was electronic, they hope to be able to get me back the information in, you know, a shorter period of time. If it was something that I have to research manually, it could be a longer period of time. But I will say I sent the letter to the State Department dated July 14th, mailed it on July 15th, priority mail. They probably got it the 17th, and their letter dated back to me was July 21st. So I'm pretty pleased with the fact that they have recorded my request and given me a tracking number, and I will keep you all apprised of any other updates when I get
them. Yeah, thanks, Dave.
And the other thing that we had talked about was that if you had corrected your status and gotten your passport over 6 months ago, another option was through LexisNexis, and Michael and I even had a conversation with John on that. Many attorneys use LexisNexis, but I also found out over the weekend from a good friend of mine that much like credit bureau inquiries, each person is allowed a free LexisNexis inquiry once a year.
Ooh.
So you and Michael and John and any of your other people or any of the students listening, if they have gotten their passport with a corrected status more than 6 months ago, you can go on LexisNexis and get a free once a year inquiry. And I wish one of you two guys would do that so we could get the results. You may get that from LexisNexis quicker than I get my reply from the U.S. Department of State.
All right. So
very good.
When you go on LexisNexis, however that would happen, David, what are you – I mean, here's where I'm lost. What are the procedures? Okay, that's all I want to know.
I'll bottom line it for you. I don't have that now, and the reason I don't have it now is that I only did my passport and status correction with the passport was valid April 10th. So I'm going to have to wait till October 11th until I do that. So I wasn't worried about researching that, but I will research that and get you the book chapter and verse, email it to you so you can share it with GW and move forward, okay?
That's cool. That's cool. Yeah, David, I appreciate it.
Also, just as an FYI, David, I did forward that information that you sent me, you mentioned on this call just now, to John, and we're going to set up a conference call with you and John if we may.
Cool. Very good. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. All right.
You
Miss
bet.
Jennifer Sue. Whoop. Sorry. I unmuted you back. Go ahead, David.
I'm through.
Oh, you're through. Okay. I didn't hear what you said. I cut you off. One moment. All right. Jennifer Sue, how do you do?
I'm very well. Thank you.
Wonderful.
I didn't. What is the LexisNexis inquiry about? Sorry, I didn't quite get that. What's the inquiry?
Well, let me unmute him again.
Okay.
You got
Go
me?
Ahead, David. Yeah, gotcha. Go ahead.
Okay. There are several different ways to confirm your corrected status.
Okay.
One method is to submit a letter to the U.S. Department of State under the Freedom of Information Act, which is what I did last couple of weeks ago. And that's
right.
The documentation that I was talking about. And I received the confirmation in the mail Saturday, which I was glad to receive because it at least showed that, number one, they got my request, and number two, they assigned it a file number and gave me a toll-free number to follow up.
I see.
The second way that a person that has already corrected their political status and got their new passport is if that was done at least 6 months after the effective date of your passport, you can go on to LexisNexis. That's a database that many, many lawyers use around the country. And you can inquire to the U.S. State Department for your status through LexisNexis. Michael and John and I had a call on this last week. John used to have a subscription to it, has let it expire because he wasn't actively using it. In our discussion, he said he may go ahead and reactivate it, but a day or two after our call, I found out that anybody, you don't need to be an attorney, anybody can make one free LexisNexis inquiry per year. And so if you have already corrected your status and have your passport and the issue date was in excess of 6 months ago, you should be able to go on under your once-a-year free opportunity and get confirmation that the U.S. Department of State has corrected your status to that of American national as opposed to being a U.S. citizen. And then the third method is to go driving down the road 120 miles an hour and get stopped and ask the officer to run your passport card, and he should be able to see that your status has been corrected. You're an American national and not under their jurisdiction. The third method is probably has some consequences that may be tougher to get out of than the FOIA request or the LexisNexis.
Okay.
All right.
I would like to say, is there a defense for an American national driving a car that has plates and a registration sticker on it because they say that's in their New York State jurisdiction? Is there a defense against that? Being an American national.
Yeah, I would say the defense is that I'm not a motor vehicle. I'm a person a man born on the land under the Constitution with God-given rights. But rather than go through that method, I chose to go ahead and submit a FOIA request. Once I've had my passport past 6 months in one day, I'll be going on LexisNexis to get that confirmation as well.
It's going to be interesting to see what it says. It's really going to be
interesting. Absolutely. I agree, GW.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what it says, because here's the thing that I've been telling everybody for a long, long time, and I get asked this, you know, over and over and over again, and of course it's something you got to deal with. I'll have people that are calling me up and they're or texting me or whatever, you know, and asking me about the one star, the five stars, or, you know, my passport has this many stars, or there's a certain numeral, you know, or there's something different, or there's a 01, or there's an A, or there's this or that. Okay, it's all over the board, and it has been forever. These numbers, the stars, and everything. The thing about it, that when they pull up your information, I keep on saying this over and over again, and I want to beat it into everybody's head. The only place it really matters ever is when an administrating official, that's somebody who's been given the authority, not just the authority, but they've been given permission as some kind of an administrative official, either a cop or a judge or the man that's taking your passport at the gate, okay, when you're moving through customs, and they pull up the information about you on the screen, okay? When they pull up that information on the screen, it actually does not say that you're an American national. It doesn't say you're a state citizen. They hide that, okay, and the way that they get around it is that it says something to the effect of, like, if they really search, it says something to the effect of, like, you're basically a diplomatic courier, or you're an ambassador at large. Because we keep on getting the same
question.
That
would be fine with me.
Yeah, okay, good, good. Because I believe, and have believed this for a long, long time, that they don't want to ever say that this person is a American national or a state citizen rather than a U.S. citizen. I don't think they ever want to give that up, as long as they can hide it, you know, in plain sight. So,
well, we'll see what the FOIA request shows.
Yeah, yeah.
Yep.
So Jennifer's question also in that is, like, how would you mount a defense, okay, when you're in a vehicle that is registered and has all that? Okay.
Can I just ask, you're a little bit blurry. I don't know if it's my phone or yours. Does anyone else? It's hard to hear you, GW.
Is it really? Okay. Hear everybody really well. Very blurry right now?
That's better.
Is this better?
Yes.
Okay. I'm holding my hand up to the mic in front of my face. Okay. I got my hand in front of my mouth, and I guess it maybe will help. So again, Jennifer, you asked the question, how would you mount a defense? And let's go over this again. When they pull up the information about you, and you are, you know, on your passport or your passport card, okay, and it says, do not arrest, do not detain, do not search, Do you think that's a pretty good defense?
Well, the tickets that I got, I was not in, I was one of the red light things. All I do is send you a bill in the mail. And the other one was the registration sticker wasn't on the window, and I wasn't in the car, so I just got a bill in the mail. And they won't accept my
American
National
card,
my affidavit, or anything. They say you have a you have plates and a registration sticker, so that puts you in our jurisdiction, basically.
Okay.
So I'm just wondering if there's against that.
Yeah, that would be. I really don't know what to tell you. I've never encountered that before.
I also have a friend or an acquaintance, should I say, who does not have plates and does not have a registration sticker, and he was pulled over and was going to be arrested and stuff like that. So whether you have plates or not, they still do the same thing, basically.
I've been
working on
I think the fact that they can continue to ask the car for money, but they won't get very far because they can't ask me for money. I'm not in the
car.
If there was something you could do about forwarding something to help out.
Am I still on, Michael?
You are.
Okay. I'd like to say that
right now.
I have been listening to you, GW, and John, and Bernie for at least 2 years, maybe three.
If you had something,
well over.
That would be appreciated and very helpful.
I don't know, 150, 250 calls.
You don't have to call me back, but
it's not that I'm simple-minded and need that much education. I have a lot of people that have asked me to research all of this thoroughly. And as you know, Michael, I've sent Bernie a lot of business, and we'll send you a lot more because I love what you're doing on the CorpSol and the CRT site. I'm totally comfortable with what GWU and Michael and Bernie and I have done on correcting my status. But I will say, for anybody listening, I didn't correct my status to get out of a speeding ticket
or
any traffic issue. Quite honestly, I think that is so de minimis, it's so frivolous, it's not even worth thinking about. I did it for much bigger issues. If
Amen.
An agency of the, a three-letter agency came after me with a multi-million dollar civil or a criminal issue, I wanted to be able to know that I had.
I will, but I'll let you know what it is
because
so
I was not subject to that jurisdiction.
I know you don't keep records, but I do.
If I get a ticket on the side of the road, I'm not going to fight the officer. I may argue it administratively. If they say, gee golly gosh, we don't understand what you're saying because we're stupid, we haven't been trained in this. They won't say that, but that's the reason. Then I'll take a defensive driving course online and spend, 3 hours and get the thing dismissed. So unless you have a proclivity to being a really horrible driver so that you're going to attract like a magnet citation after citation, that is about the absolute least thing of importance in my mind to correct the status.
I mean, I can hear you now.
There are far bigger things that the three letters could do to anybody should
In my defense, it's the principle of the matter. That's all. They shouldn't be allowed to do that, and that's why I am doing it, because if I can't get out of a simple issue, what makes you think I'm going to get out of a bigger issue if they won't even let you get out of a smaller issue? And that's why I'm doing it. I want to see, well, does this really work before I do anything? That is
depends on where you want to spend your time and money.
I want to just see if this works with a simple issue. I don't want any large issues, and I don't intend to have any large issues, but I want to see if it works with a little issue. And it's the principle of the thing as well. It's the principle of the matter. It's not, it's unconstitutional or whatever. So if we let them get away with an inch, they just keep taking more miles. As you know, look at the country. They've taken look at all the rights they've taken. You've got to start somewhere, and this is something I can do on a local level.
Amen.
Yeah, gotcha.
For myself, I'm going to create a package for myself, not for anybody else. If they want it, fine. I'll share it. However, it will cover a traffic stop so that I can say to the officer, friend, I'm giving you notice. It's a term in law that when you're proceeding in this direction as you have been trained, I will be filing in federal court in the next week to 10 days a federal lawsuit against you for deprivation of rights under color of law. I don't want to. However, it is the only thing that I can do to establish a reason for you to share with others why the police officer should be determining the political citizenship status of whoever they pull over before they proceed. So I'm sorry, that's where this will go. On the other hand, you also have the right not to prosecute anything you don't want to prosecute. You are allowed to be selective, and I pray that you do. You do that once, and then somebody else does it once, and they find out that John Doe, officer badge number whatever, is in federal court because they pulled Jennifer Sue over for doing 85 and a 70 on the interstate. Word will get out. And when the prosecutors are next in line, and any one of them maintain their standing, they don't drop the case, word will get out. And I agree with Jennifer Sue that this is how we restore the integrity of our constitutional republic. And that's what I'm doing. I'll also be making a trip to Tallahassee, Florida. I will attempt to meet with the Department of Motor Vehicle head, as well as the State Department, and just say, here's a lawsuit that we've gone through, and you need to consider, in my opinion, creating a license plate that you will give to the people that ask you for it, so that when one of your law enforcement officers runs the tag, it has the same effect as if one of your law enforcement officers ran the pass card through the machine, through their computer in their office. Same effect. So that we don't have to proceed after this. If they want to take a picture of that tag and then note that somebody was doing 85 and a 70 and mail them a traffic ticket, if that makes you feel better, fine, do it. But don't pull them over. Don't falsely arrest them. And when you impede their forward activity, you are arresting them. That is the law. That's the decision of the Supreme Court of the United States. So that's the direction I'm going in.
Yeah. I mean, I don't want any big issues. I want to only have little issues, and I'm testing it out on little issues. And if you want a big issue, great. I don't.
Right. Back 40 years ago, when I cut my was cutting my teeth on traffic tickets, going to traffic court, et cetera, I had a prosecutor tell me one time that they hated to see me come in because I wasted so much of their time and, more importantly, their money.
Right. Anyway.
Whatever works. But, all right. Thank you so much, Jennifer. Thank you so very much, David R.
Thank you.
Thank you for all of the others that have asked questions tonight. We appreciate you, Brent. GW, any closing comments? Well, let me check Freedom's Radio while you're thinking about that.
Sure. Sure. Do you hear me? I was trying to think of some things. I want to stress to the people on the call. I was just talking with one of my guys again today, who had amazing experiences, because he flies a lot internationally. And then he was the one also who attached his global entry card to his brand new corrected passport. And he's kicking himself in the rear end because he's really realized that he's done everything he can to try to find out how he can reverse that now. Because he attached his global entry card, which basically when he signed up for that, then he was a U.S. citizen. So everything reverted. And now it didn't take his status away. It didn't take his status through the State Department away. What it did was it reverts all the time now to his global entry card. Okay, where now he's just one of the sheep again. Okay, so now he gets treated like what he used to get treated like, and he's just kicking himself right and left. Poor guy. And he always says, Greg, you know, definitely tell people not to do this, not to do the global entry card. Don't. So I say, okay, Derek, I'll be sure to tell people that.
Yeah, GW, if it's of any help at all, if I were he, I would amend my paperwork with a affidavit stating that when the blanket question of being a United States citizen was requested, that you were opting for definition number 3 or definition number 1 if you qualify, but you were definitely not considering definition number 2. That's just what I would do.
Sure.
Much like you have on the affidavit.
Right. Yeah.
Okay.
All
right. Brent is our last student for tonight. Go ahead, Brent.
Yeah, I made it to the other side of the mountain and got back on the call. I'd just like to talk about that international entry. I go through the line customs that says diplomats. And it works out beautifully for me. There's no line there typically. So when you're coming in from out of the country, you got your American national passport, just take the diplomat line.
Really?
Wow.
There is a diplomat line, you're saying?
Well, it depends. In New York there is, yeah.
Okay.
Depends on the city and how their customs are set up. But, yeah, there's a special line for crew members, and there's a special line for diplomats, and there's a special line for U.S. citizens, and then there's another line for foreign people that are not U.S. citizens.
Super.
Yeah.
And also,
okay.
Michael, I would like to also echo your sentiments as far as we need to be working on this in every little jurisdiction that we can. And we have an issue here in our family that I would love to file that complaint with the federal deprivation.
Well, I believe
right?
That's in process right now.
Okay.
John's working on that.
Okay, and also your personal note or briefing for the police officer put me on the list that I'd like to review that and tailor it for my own use.
Yeah, when I'm finished with it, I will definitely publish it on these calls that I have it, and if anybody wants it, they're welcome to it.
Fantastic. Thank you so much.
Thank you. All right. Everyone, please join us tomorrow night. Brother John will be returning. He is the point of the spear for any and all litigation and as on the team. And in doing so, whether you have a LLC or a trust or a corporation sole, he can be when it comes under attack. And please, nearly 30 years, there's not even been the first attack. So we're not expecting any. But then again, post-RV, there's going to be a lot of money on the table, and that will bring the cockroaches out. It's not a problem to then amend the entity, leaving appointing John as a limited power of attorney to defend the trust. And he can come in and do what lawyers will never do, which is actually fight to win. So that's tomorrow night's call. And again, a reminder for Wednesday night's call is Mr. Slevin, the LLC that is an LLC for commercial purposes that has no tax footprint, no tax liability. Until then, good night, everyone, and be well.
The conference is now completed. Goodbye. Welcome to the conference. Please enter the conference ID. The conference is now completed. Goodbye. Welcome to the conference. Please enter the conference ID, followed by the pound key. Thank you. Guest ID accepted.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.